Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast.
Can the Straw Hats be to God? We're going to find out on today's episode of Systematic Geekology. We are the priests to the geeks. As we continue on through our coverage of One Piece arc by arc, we're going to be in the Jaya and Skypiea arcs today. But of course, I mean we, as in I'm Christian Ashley of Systematic Geekology, but I am joined today by the greatest co-host of all time, the one for whom podcasting was actually developed all those years ago that said, you know, we're okay at what we're doing, but we need to have that guy around us. And that man, of course, is TJ Blackwell. How's it going, TJ?
Great. Thank you.
Exuberant as always. But we couldn't possibly do this by ourselves. Even though perfection is in our midst, we needed more perfection. And I have my co-leader of the revolution against Joshua, Elizabeth Pengelang and Clyde. How's it going, Peng?
Hello, it's going pretty well.
That's good. Yeah, we're on spring break right now, so all those losers who are in school, well, we're going to be those losers in a little bit when you actually hear this. But for right now, we're cool. We're just having fun. And we decided to use part of our spring break to talk about One Piece. What better thing could we do with our time? So guys, before we actually get into the episode proper, what have you been geeking out on?
Go ahead, CJ.
No, please go.
Okay. So I got like overstressed studying for a big test I have coming up. So the natural thing to do is to finally buy COD. And so I bought it and I've been playing it nonstop. Cold War version. Yeah. I was usually a Gears person, but I just did it.
Nice. Cold War is fun. I like Cold War.
Particularly Prop Wars has really given me a lot of joy right now.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people didn't like TJ? Cold War Zombies. I thought Cold War Zombies was pretty good. That's just me. Yeah, I got back into Elden Ring.
The DLC is coming out in June, and some friends downloaded the Seamless Co-op mod.
Big yawns.
Yeah.
But man, it's great. So we've put like 40 hours into that this past week.
Is that what you were up until 4 a.m. doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, DJ had a wild night last night, you know, going in the lands between to save everyone or cause destruction, knowing TJ.
The frenzied flame.
Oh, no. Yeah. I, on the other hand, I have finally gone through every single Pretty Cure series ever, all 20 some, and I am caught up to Wonderful Pretty Cure, which is what is airing currently right now in Japan. It feels good to be done. Because some of those were a slog to get through. Others of them, man, they're some of my favorites. I love that series. Yeah, is it meant for girls? Of course, but it's so much fun. So with all that in mind, we're going to get into the meat and potatoes of this discussion. Going into the Jaya and Skypiea arcs. Now, there's a lot going on here, so I'm going to need your guys' help. Whenever you guys want to start talking about what's going on, have at it. We'll just build off of each other. Can we explain what happens in these arcs? Who wants to go first?
I say it's the El Dorado version of One Piece right now. They find the city of gold. It's pretty magical.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there are a few deeper lore things that happen in Skypiea that we don't really learn about until much, much later. this is kind of where we see our first real Logia. I don't count Crocodile, because then, you know, he's just sand.
Yeah.
A real scary Logia.
Yeah. Basically, it kind of just, you know, starts off, you know, we've left Vivi behind in Arabasta, and we end up, you know, Robin has joined the crew, and as they're journeying, they see this ship just fall from the sky, and also their log post starts like pointing upward, if I remember correctly, and they're like, what's going on? And that's where we kind of learn the lore behind what sky islands are, and one of them being Skypea, which people think is a myth, and they kind of get laughed off for thinking it's a thing until they end up meeting Bellamy at with the Dreamless City at Mock Town or whatever it is. It's been a while since I've watched this, so I'm sorry. My memory's not the best. And they also meet some strange pirates there that kind of just watch their antics, and Luffy ends up becoming, for the time, frenemies with this guy, we don't get his name, who insults the way he eats his food. Luffy insults him for his choices in food. Is it cherry pies or meat? Which one is more important? That's something worthy of coming over to blows. Until, is this when Bellamy comes in to mess with Luffy?
Yeah. He just kind of comes to bully Luffy.
Yeah. And basically tells him, like, you know, your dreams are not worth anything. And Nami had earlier asked him not to fight anyone. And they both, he and Zoro both agreed not to, like, do that. But then it just reaches a breaking point where Luffy just one-hit KOs Bellamy. And this fine young man, who Luffy was almost getting into a fight into earlier, just tells him that he should pursue his dreams, and that's something that he should never give up on. You know, what a nice guy, this guy, who will never end up becoming a villain later on. And they decide to go to Skypea. So, lay it on me. What happens after that?
So, getting to Skypea, they spend a little bit of time being in shock, naturally, because they're on Sky Island now. And they start meeting the natives. Not friendly, but they work through that eventually. They learn about, what is the city called? Jaya, right? Is the city's name?
Inside of Skypea?
What is the city of gold called? Do they just call it the city of gold?
I'll look it up. Continue.
I don't remember.
Pandora? But
is it Pandora?
No, Shandora.
Shandora. All right. The Shannara Chronicles. But they learn about what the natives are going through with Enel, their not benevolent overlord. And, you know, Luffy hates oppression. So from there, there's only one thing that could really happen. So Luffy gets down to business.
But also they learn a lot of like ancient technology and whatnot, because this is pretty much Touch City. And they learn about the dials that come in. So they're kind of using these scooters to scoot across water and all these dials to like record things. And so like we kind of get an advancement in technology as well this arc.
Yeah, I really wish the dials stayed around more. Like Usopp still uses them, but he's the only one.
I mean, if you can only get them from that city, they're, you know, a hard resource to come by.
No, they just didn't take enough of them.
Yeah, well, only Usopp did, because he's a coward. He's like, ooh, this will help me.
And he was right.
He was. Yeah. He was.
And we also get some deep Poneglyph lore here. And that since no one really knew where Skypea was, they were kind of able to get out of, what was it, the Void Century, where a lot of that information was lost to time. It was destroyed by the world government, but they have enough of it left behind. And they find a note from Roger himself, like, encouraging them on the journey, proving, you know, Robin's ability to, you know, her usefulness to the crew, and that she's like one of the only people alive who's willing to work with them and knows how to study the Poneglyphs. We learn about the ancient weapon Poseidon here, if I remember correctly. But it all kind of is built around the idea is that this is under a dictatorship by Enel, Eneru. I'm going to flip-flop between the two. I kind of tend to say Eneru more. There's a right one. There's a wrong one. I'm probably wrong. And his powers are that he's basically lightning. And He's also an equal opportunity attacker. He doesn't care if you're a man or a woman. His fists are rated E for everyone. And he takes down parts of the crew except until Luffy gets there. Guys, the way your face is the same as Aneru when he realized he couldn't affect Luffy. One of the best reactions we've ever gotten in One Piece.
Yeah. That's one of probably the funniest, just like straight up gags in One Piece is if you hadn't connected the dots thus far, realizing that the man made of lightning will not be able to hurt the rubber dude.
Science is fun.
It's great. It's such a good payoff. And
I feel like Luffy earned it though from getting, you know, from Crocodile. Like he earned that one. He needed that break.
Yeah. He deserved to be on the other side of a bad matchup.
Right.
But man, Enel's face. And you know, what happens if I spoil like 10 arcs from now?
Or I think you say, hey, we're going to spoil something 10 arcs from now. So if you want to skip ahead, skip ahead.
Yeah, skip ahead a couple of minutes. I don't know how a tree sap man would, you know, get in the way. Or I guess Sun God Nika is also immune to lightning. But, you know, it works.
Yeah, it's also around this time we kind of figure out one of Naruto's plans is that he wants to go to this fantastic place. What is it? Fairy Viarth? Is that the name?
Yeah.
We find out it's actually the moon. And Verth, thank you. And he actually succeeds in that. And we've had several, like, one of the things Oda does at the beginning of his manga chapters is he has this one panel that has next to nothing to do with, like, what is currently going on, but shows what other characters have been doing in the past. So we've seen him a couple times since then, just, like, on the moon. It's just a lot of fun. Like, this, we can learn a lot of, like, lore in this arc, these two arcs here. These also where the Going Merry suffers some very significant damage. And we kind of get the hints of there may be a little more to this ship than we thought, is that there's this mysterious figure who seems to be repairing it, too. Like, there's a lot in here. So just for the sake of not covering every single thing that happens here, what were your initial thoughts about these arcs in general?
I thought they were a lot of fun. Like, the story just feels a lot of fun right now. You know, you see Bellamy, Blackbeard. You don't know it yet, but they're interesting characters. You get introduced to all of the Skypeans. They're interesting characters. They're super strong. Enel, great fight. Fun character. Really cool powers. He even gets to accomplish his goal, which you'll actually never see if you're just watching the anime, unfortunately. But
yeah, doesn't Nami get her like super weather tech pole as well? Like the dude upgrades Nami, or is that a different one? Am I getting confused?
I think it's this arc. If you're out there screaming, it's actually this arc, it's actually this one. It's like, you know what? Sorry. I get it. It's okay. Hey, there's 1,000+ chapters in here and 1,000+ anime episodes. So if we screw something up, it's not intentional. But can you imagine how it's possible we might have screwed that up with all that information?
I like the character development of like just Nami and Usopp, because obviously they're the weakest ones. And so they're like, ooh, we can like the growth of them from like how they go from weak to pretty good. It's like just nice and slow. And that's just the reality of it. It's not all of a sudden I was born or I've unleashed this power or I just powered up because of sheer willpower. I like that they have to use their intellect and brains and a little bit cowardness to get through it. And so it's nice having whenever they get the upper hand a little bit. So with Usopp and his dials, go ahead.
Yeah, they gain a lot in these arcs here to set them aside from everyone else. Because, yeah, they are some of the weakest members of the crew. Well, how do you, in a series, especially in a shonen, like power scaling, power creep comes in and messes things up to where, you know, your Krillins and Tiens don't matter as much as your Gokus and Vegetas by the end of the story. Well, how do you keep Nami and Usopp relevant? Well, you could give them a devil fruit, which might work like depending on how you play it.
I like that some of the crews don't have devil power. It just makes it once again, I like the dynamics.
Or you do something interesting with them that is part of the lore of your own series, where you get them showcasing how they can use these dials or what have you to be relevant in the crew without like gaining some power out of nowhere. Like, you know, Nami has always been a Super Saiyan or something like that. You know, a ridiculous thing like that would have been in a lesser written series.
Sanji.
But in here, we get away. We get away for them to be relevant, and it's done well. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, my initial thoughts on this. I love this arc. It's so much fun. We, as a world building guy who loves to see creators like explain aspects of the worlds they make. That's why I love playing D&D. That's why, you know, I love, you know, getting into the deeper lore of any series where I will read the encyclopedias and stuff like that just to see, oh, this city that was mentioned once, here's what it's all about. Like, we get this. And the fact that gold is like essentially worthless to them as mm-hmm. in a city made of gold, and the Straw Hats finally act like pirates and start stealing gold, but they could have taken much more if they had just asked. It's right. Just something that's so well done, because just the relationships between them and the people that they're saving, you know, oh yeah, we should probably act like pirates every now and then too. And it, in its own way, kind of backfires against them. It's so funny. Like, we learn more about the Poneglyphs here, like I mentioned earlier. We get some more for Robin there in that aspect. It's so much fun. This is just, Aneru works as a good villain, in my opinion. There's so much mm-hmm. in this. Anything else you guys want to say about your initial reactions?
I just thought it was a great concept. Like, I would love to be above the clouds, living on a cloud. Mm. Super cool.
Yeah, even them getting to the island was, I mean, if you think about it in the setting, it was pretty realistic. They had to like navigate and find a geyser and time it to go up. It wasn't like, oh, we found this, like we just got lucky. No, I hate when everyone and it kind of fumbles through the storyline. I'm like, no, there was strategy here.
Oh, yes. So do you guys have a favorite moment from this arc? And if so, why is it your favorite?
Sanji getting electrocuted.
Oh, to save everyone else? Yes.
Yep. I'm a big Sanji guy. And I think Skypiea is the most, like, looking back, is the most contextualized by the story recently. Because we get a lot of foreshadowing. And part mm-hmm. of that is Sanji being able to tank an actual electrocution.
And stand.
And standing.
Afterwards.
And he's like, thanks. I needed a light.
Yeah, that's not human.
Go ahead, Bang.
Per se. I'm just saying, like, you kind of just see a little bit of, like, Sanji's not, like, can't be fully a regular dude.
Yeah, you could easily write that off. So it's just a comedy of One Piece or something like that. But no, like, there is a deeper reason for why Sanji is able to take this hit that doesn't get revealed until, what, 700 chapters from now? Mm-hmm. But it's foreshadowing like this that makes that payoff worth it. Because you go, wait, how is he able to do that? Well, it's really cool right now. I'm going to question it a bit. But I know Oda's thinking of something, so I'll get to that answer eventually. When the answer comes, it's good. It's golden.
I didn't even question it. I didn't question it at all. I was like, oh, Sanji's strong.
Yeah, I was like, oh, he's him.
Yeah. He's too strong. Like, that makes sense.
Well, how about you, Peng? What was one of your favorite moments here?
Honestly, is I was just so happy for Nami doing her little scooter thing, because very few things brings me joy of like going to a city and renting the birds, like those scooters, and just flying around. They're so fun. So I just love, at the beginning, before they knew about the gods, I always love the carefree moments of them just having fun and enjoying time with each other. So I appreciate that before the fighting, because when it's all fighting, like DBZ, it's almost like, it's the same thing with this too. Like, when a fight episode is 1,000 episodes and it's like, we have 5 minutes until the planet explodes, and that 5 minute lasts 10 episodes. It's like, wow, longest 5 minutes of my life.
21, if you're talking about
Joy's Goku, a filler.
Frieza.
Oh, was it 21 when that one? I can't remember.
19 or 21.
Gosh, it's a lot better in Kai. Much like a lot of things, it's a lot better in Kai.
Yeah, so I love the carefreeness of the crew whenever they get breaks. I, unpopular opinions, I enjoy some filler episodes when they do that. I want to see them
having the characters. Absolutely, yes.
Yes.
That's what a good filler episode should do. It should build up on things mm-hmm. in between characters and let them have fun. It should feel like it should be part of the show versus, we're going to show up here and this arc is going to happen and we're never once going to reference back to it because it's not actually canon. We just needed time to fill in the spaces.
Right. Yeah. Oh, like here's a tiny little villain two episode fight. No, I wanted to see romance. Always want to see romance.
Well, you've been sorely disappointed for like 1,000 chapters.
But see, no, One Piece, I expect no romance. You know what I mean? I get it.
Yeah, and you still got Whole Cake Island, so you're welcome.
Dude, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, that's going to be a while till we get there. But for me, I mean, we talked about it before. It's that moment, like, Inari just feels like this unstoppable threat. Like, what the heck are the Straw Hats going to do against him? Some of our best guys have gone up and they've just gotten beat. The allies they made along the way have no chance against them until Luffy is finally able to make it back to the fray and he no-sells Inaru's abilities. And we get that great reaction image of him just bugging out because no one has done this. He has been called a god because, compared to humanity, he is pretty much a god. He is unable to be stopped by anything that they threw against him until Luffy shows up. And that's when the tide starts to turn. And yet, even though he does get his goal at the end of the day, it's still a win because, hey, he's not oppressing these people anymore. Mm-hmm. I love that scene so much.
If you'd like to support our show, please consider joining our Patreon, where you get live access to our YouTube exclusive, including our comic book catch-up, Manga Mustard, Drinks with Tejas, and our companion series that we do each year with our annual theme. You can also get exclusive merch, including t-shirts, handbags, a coffee mug, and a long sleeve shirt. We also have available bonus extra questions at the end of most of our podcast episodes. You get access to exclusive Discord channels, discounts on our store, access to any future online D&D campaigns. You get to vote on topics for some of our episodes. You can easily access all of the Patreon content right through Spotify now. So super easy. Go to our Spotify page at the top. It's going to say exclusive content for subscribers. If you're a patron, hit that button. You get all of our bonus content right there on Spotify, right with your regular feed. And of course, you get the satisfaction of knowing you helped a podcast in need. Our overhead includes editing software, marketing equipment, recording software, and a lot more. And there's a lot that goes into keeping the lights on here. And we really appreciate all of our patron subscribers for helping this show happen.
Yeah. All right. So, do you have something else you want to say, TJ?
Nope.
Okay.
I feel like, how many episodes in anime was this? I feel like it wasn't drawn out either.
How many episodes in anime? Let me double check.
I just feel like it wasn't drawn out, which I appreciated.
Skypiea was 43 episodes and Jaya was 9.
Cool.
That's beautiful. We have some fight scenes. It feels like that's 43 episodes down the road.
Yeah, Katakuri was 22.
Well, how much was the Mochi guy?
22.
Oh, that was the name of him? I just know him as Mochi guy.
Yeah, that one was pretty
one of the best characters. He's just the Mochi guy, she says.
It's true, and I want his powers, but that's another episode.
Yeah. Well, speaking of characters, was there anyone who stood out the most to you in this arc?
Sanji.
Sanji, go for it.
The little ship character. Because number one, that kind of freaked me out, a little scary. I would have had nightmares. And just like the foreshadowing of what's going to happen is heartbreaking.
Yes. What's it? Klabautermann is what it's revealed to be. It's like later on in Water 7. So we won't get too much into that. But yeah, the reveal of this, is it Usopp who sees it first?
Mm-hmm. Because he's sleeping. He's been trying to repair the ship. And then while he was taking a break sleeping, he hears the banging and someone else is repairing the ship.
Yes. It is a creepy scene, but also like it kind of tantalizes you. Like, what's going on here? That's a little weird. Mm-hmm. But TJ, you said Sanji. Other than what we've talked about, is there anything else?
No, he's just him. He's just not scared to fight someone who is clearly stronger than everyone else he's ever seen.
Yeah.
What was Zoro doing in all this? Was he lost? We haven't talked about.
He was lost a lot in Skypiea.
That's what I thought.
Yes. This is one of those that really solidifies his inability to just go in a direction and find where he's supposed to be.
Makes sense.
Yeah, he does other stuff, but it's not really coming to me. Surely he has a fight here.
Yeah, I can't think about Zoro. I don't think of Zoro when I think of Skypiea.
Yeah, he fights I never remember his name, but he's really cool and he's pretty strong. But I don't think it's like significant.
Okay. So he does have a fight, but it's not as cool as the other ones. We'll just put it that way. Yeah. Characters. I mean, my girl, Robin. Like, she's not a huge presence in a fight in this arc. Not really. She doesn't really fare well against Neru. But what she does do is what she does best, and that is studying poneglyphs and the history of the world. And because of her actions, seeing that message from Roger, she figures out that they know about the history of the world too. And if she can continue to find them, maybe she'll learn it as well. And we also hear the word Laugh Tale for the first time in this arc, something that we're not going to really get too much until Sabaldi and Wano, which, by the way, are hundreds of chapters removed from this moment in time. But Robin starts finding it out here first, and I just love what she brings to the crew, is like the straight man for all the antics of everyone else. But also at the same time, you know, she can be goofy herself at times, but she's also got a purpose in mind. We're going to find out more in Water 7 what's going on there. But for right now, like, she's still one of my favorites in this arc.
Yeah. Yeah. She is a big part of the crew that a lot of people don't think about, but none of this happens without her.
Yes. One of the greatest additions to the cast. You know, I love my goofy guys who just like randomly going from place to place. Yeah, Luffy's going to be king of the pirates. Well, how are you going to do that? Don't worry about it. It's going to happen. You know, Nami will just take me wherever I want to go. And Zoro is not the navigator for a reason. So we mentioned him a couple of times, obviously, as like the big bad of this arc. But like, how does Neru Anel work as a villain for you?
Oh, I love him. He's classic ego trip, megalomaniac, unstoppable in his own right. It's very natural what I feel like a lot of people would kind of become any Nell figure in the same situation. I think the most interesting part about him, though, is his motivations. Mm-hmm. Why does he want to go to Verth? You can do pretty much whatever you want in East Blue, but it's not what he wants to do.
Yeah, so. I think that speaks a lot about us. It's like, no, I've gotten what I wanted, but there's always one more thing I need to go to, and that's kind of Verth for him.
Yeah, and he does do it, so good for him, I guess.
Yeah, he was all right. I didn't really think anything of him. Like, I liked him. I didn't hate him. Nice villain.
Fair enough. Yeah, I agree with DJ. Like, when you have a shonen series like this, you've got to figure out how to play your villains against your heroes. And your Straw Hats, they're goofy guys, but they're also very loyal to one another. They look after each other. And then you pit them against someone like him, who is pretty much an unstoppable force. We don't have like the understandings of hockey that we get later on that would make a Logia user unable to use his powers as effectively as he is able to do so here. So like, hey, he may be a god in this part of the world, but in the other parts of the world, he's not really that big of a threat if, you know, he doesn't enhance his abilities. So it's probably a good thing for him that he ended up going to Verth and that he never had to worry about it being shut down. But that total control that he has, the dictatorship he has over the people of this region and how no one can go up against him is so amazing when you're building up. It's like no one can beat him. No one can beat him. Someone can beat him. And that's the guy, our pal Luffy, who goes up against him, can actually make contact with him and punch him in the face or what have you. That makes a good villain in that you, when that moment happens, you feel so satisfied. Kind of like early, you know, in the Jaya, you saw Bellamy like bouncing around all over the place in the city, like threatening Luffy. And then Luffy just takes him down in one hit after all that buildup. It just feels pretty dang good. And it feels pretty dang good to see that once again, that reaction image of him realizing he can't beat Luffy with his powers.
Yeah. Poor guy, honestly. Just bad luck.
Yeah. I mean, but that's all. That's a part of the battle, too. You got to be a little lucky.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, as mentioned earlier, in the Jaya arc, we meet a fine young man who doesn't give his name, and he disagrees with Luffy about their meal choices and almost comes to blow with him over this topic. But in the end, does encourage Luffy to never give up on his dreams. How nice is it to meet such a respectable person who will always end up being a good friend of the crew?
Well, I think it's good for the crew to have nice, close friends that aren't crew members that they can rely on. Also, I wish they had fought.
He's like Ace in this arc.
Yeah. I wish they had fought. Oh, that would have been really funny. Because at this point, Blackbeard just would have killed him.
Slaughtered him.
All of them.
Bang, any thoughts on that, about this nice young man?
No. I'm on team meat pie because I don't like cherry.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm not a cherry guy myself.
No, now if it was apple pie, pecan pie, I would have been on, you know, that side. But we're going to go with meat pie.
Yeah, if you haven't figured out now, we're joking. We're making fun. This is Blackbeard. Like, we don't really get a focus on him in his arc as far as, like, names and stuff like that. But he's going to end up becoming way more important later on. And, in fact, is one of the people that Ace is pursuing that we saw in one of the earlier arcs. And is going to affect the future of One Piece for years to come. Now, we're not going to talk too much about spoilers, but the fact that he is introduced in this way and the fact that later on you realize, oh, if they had actually fought, things would have been really, really bad for the Straw Hats at this point in time. They're just not strong enough to fight a man like this who has been out in the sea for many, many years. Yeah, it brings some terror and horror to a situation that is kind of funny if you don't know who this person is.
Yeah. Contextualizing it can just be terrifying because, wow, like the series could have ended right there.
Mm.
True.
But instead, like in an odd way, since Luffy stood up for his ideals of, you know, chasing his dreams, Blackbeard praises him for that. And that's a good thing to do for a villain, you know, as opposed to someone like Neru, who is like this huge, you just want to punch him in the face and see things done. It's nice to have one of your big bads, like just having a conversation with your heroes and having them agree on something.
Not every villain has to be some kind of psychopath. I want to destroy everything.
Yes. And this is a great start for that, especially with what happens later on. This is the building point that we have, our foundation for their relationship. I love that this is how Oda does it with that. So, like I said earlier, like one of the things that brings them together is like, hey, they're both pursuing their dreams. They're both pursuing their goals. And that's something they can find common ground on. But is how important should chasing our dreams be for us?
Medium.
It depends on what your dream is. I mean, if your dream conquered the world, I would prefer you not. You know what I mean?
You could never support Dr. Doom?
Yeah. I mean, me personally.
He has his own country.
But he should rule the world.
He should be happy with his country.
That's his dream.
If you
want
to shut down a man's dream is to be a boss babe and self-employed, go for it. If your dream is to murder your... Yeah. Yeah, he just wants to be a boss babe.
Yep. Now, I'm being playful, but yeah, there are limits, like Pang was saying. What is your dream, starting off? Like, is it something rational? Is it something that's not going to cause harm to someone else? Those are questions you should be asking yourself. And then when you do that, like, is it worth chasing that dream? You know, it was my dream as a kid to be a marine biologist. That didn't work out. Because, hey, you can't just focus on biology when you're in college. You know, the fun parts of science. You have to also study other things like physics, like chemistry, that aren't fun to me because they involve higher level mathematics. So I had to give up on that dream. And that's okay. But there are other things. Hey, it's important for me to be chasing a way to find a job to better myself. That's why I'm in seminary right now. It's not just because I really, really wanted to spend thousands upon thousands of dollars. I just felt like, you know, I can just throw that money around whenever I want to. It's like, no, that's in pursuit of a dream, a goal, you know, for pastoral ministry, something like that. That's something important to look after. But there's also things you need to give up on. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense.
If you've got a dream and it's reasonable, you've got to give it your best shot.
I kind of say I don't really dream, but I set goals, which is kind of like the same avenue. You know what I mean? I feel like dreams is kind of like whimsical type deal. And I'm such a realist. I'm like, we got goals. My goal is to do this. My goal is to do that. Here's my steps. And I feel like dreams are kind of like those out there things. Like, it must be nice one day. I would love to do this. But I'm like, no, if I want to do it. So goals.
Yeah. So one of the things we are introduced for the first time here, there's some arguments that it showed up earlier. It just wasn't called what it is later on. We're introduced to the concept of haki through it being called mantra in Skypiea. Like, how do you feel about its introduction here, especially knowing how game-changing it becomes later on in the series?
I don't really think that far series, so I was fine. I was like, ooh, power, nice. Get him.
Yeah, perfectly natural reaction.
Yeah.
Because like, you don't know what's going to happen later on. Go ahead, TJ.
It was potentially game-changing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Luffy was made out of rubber.
Yeah, it's just like brought in so it's not too much attention drawn to it. So you don't really know like what you're getting into yet as far as what he's going to develop hockey into later on in the series. And I remember there being huge arguments in the fandom back when these were being translated illegally back in the day of how to translate this word as like will or something like that instead of just calling it hockey, which is what it eventually became, because people didn't know it would be that important to the series. So yeah, this is a fine introduction to the concept, but obviously we don't get a lot of meat to, you know, figure out exactly what it is yet.
Yeah. Man, it becomes a lot more relevant later.
Oh yes.
So
to the fact that yeah, people who are proficient in hockey can take down Logia users like Eneru just easily because of how they're able to utilize it.
Yeah. Yeah, if you get the right kind of hockey, you basically have the Sharingan.
So part of this, obviously, this is a series built around piracy and treasure hunting and stuff like that. We find an actual city of gold. They're El Dorado, as it were. And as a result of it being made out of gold, they kind of just see gold as this worthless little trinket, these worthless yellow rocks, as it were. And like, what do you think about how this is handled in the show? And what does it say about our own obsession with wealth that like at the end of the day, people are still fighting to get this, that the people themselves inside of it don't really care about that much?
I mean, well, to them, it's not a limited resource. So it's the law of supply and demand. They have a lot of supply, so there's no demand. So it's worthless. Makes sense.
Yeah.
And that makes perfect sense. And like, it really just depends on where you're at, you know, and what became currency in some form of China. Yeah, we've used seashells in the past. We've used silver. We've used bronze. We've used copper. We've used all these things. We had bartering systems at one point in time where we didn't have the material wealth that we dug up from the earth or used this to exchange for goods and services. So I think it says a lot about our main characters that in their own goofy way, they're still acting like pirates. Like the one time they really commit an act of piracy is like when they could have just asked for more and they would have gotten way more than they stole. But it's also out of their love for the people there that they stole it as well. It's a weird situation, but it's really true to their characters that this is how it comes out. It's like, yeah, sure, Nami's a bit more lustful for gold than everyone else, but it's still played for fun instead of them, you know, being these evil people for taking the gold away.
And they knew it was pretty much worthless to them too. Like at that point, they understood their society and it wouldn't be missed and whatnot. So it's still fun.
Yeah. I think the bigger issue was that they couldn't carry enough gold.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't they like lose a lot of it going down anyway?
Yeah.
So funny.
And they're going to need it too because their bounties keep increasing. In fact, one of the things we saw in Jaya is them learning that I think Zoro has a bounty and Luffy's increased from like 30 million berry to 100 million berry or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's part of the reason Bellamy wanted to fight him.
Yeah. Yeah. Their rep is growing in the world. And it's because of incidents like this. And they could even say they went to the Golden City and then stole gold from them. Yeah, that's going to increase your rep even more. But do you guys have anything else you want to add before we start wrapping things up today?
I want a scooter. Yeah, I want a scooter that I can scoot on water with.
Yeah.
Is that too much to ask for?
Yeah, guys, obviously you should be watching One Piece. But if you haven't, this is a very fun arc. Well worth your time. So as far as rating and reviewing goes, where do you guys stand? 1 to 10 on this arc?
7.
7? Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Like, okay, I enjoyed it, but it wasn't perfection. Like, it was hard for me to remember it. You know, once I started remembering it, I was like, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. But it wasn't like I had to dig for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's perfectly fine.
Climbs so much higher than this, ironically.
There are
if I was rating
arcs.
It If I was rating it during the time it was released, it would definitely be higher.
You know what? That's fair. If I was reading this at release, it'd probably be like a 9, maybe a 9.5. Right now, I'd probably say an 8.5. There's a ton of good stuff here. You know, your villain, yeah, he's not the deepest character in the world, but he works perfectly fine with what Oda is trying to do here. We learn more about the world. It's a really fun time. So I see, yeah.
I'm 8.5, happy he didn't have a 7. Sob story. Like, don't give every single villain a sad sob story why they're a villain. I just want them to be bad, and I just want to beat them up. I feel like that's what happened.
You know, don't Demon Slayer it up to where everyone's got a bad backstory.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's like, I was just a man once trying to make a living.
And I say that someone who does like Demon Slayer, it gets annoying after a while. So with that in mind, do you guys have a recommendation you want to throw the audience's way?
I made a reference to it earlier. So I always like to pick an anime I've already seen. And I usually play it in the background when I do my baking and cakes. And I started with DBZ. Dragon Ball, and then, you know, the creator passed away, and so now I'm locked in. It's no longer like just a background thing, so I'm like, no, we're giving this the honor it deserves. So I'm almost done with DBZ now. It's been nice. Fun to remember.
I know a lot of people have seen Baki. I know a lot fewer people have seen Kengan Ashura. Also, pretty good, like, combat sports, you know, fighting anime. If you've seen one and not the other, watch the other one, because they're doing a crossover. They announced it like 6 years ago, and it's finally coming out this year.
I'm looking forward to that so much. Yeah, I need some more Baki in my life, and there's more Kengan Ashura coming out, I think, later this year?
The anime?
If I remember correctly. Yeah, I think there was part two of the last season they just did is going to be released now for whatever reason. Netflix doing their schedules. Yeah, I'm looking forward to more. They're both solid series to shut your brain off and just accept that big buff dudes are beating each other up and you're going to have a great time.
So good.
Oh, yeah. Now, as far as my recommendation goes, I'm going to go a little off the beaten path compared to everything else here. If you guys have never read The Death of Jean the Wolf in the Spectacular Spider-Man series, I have... recently was watching something that mentioned it again, stirred up some memories. It's like, yes, this is golden. This is one of the best Spider-Man stories ever told. Head out that way. So guys, if you're sticking around here, just know that we're also doing a bonus question that you can gain access to if you're a patron or if you go on to Captivate. We're going to be discussing, would we rather eat a Lokia, Zoan, or Paramecia devil fruit? I am very interested to see how everyone answers. So if you want to know that, we'll just throw a little money our way and you can get that bonus question. But before that, we do want to shout out some patrons. Ethan Overcash, Austin Nance, and Amber Riley, you guys are the best. Thank you for everything that you do for us. But remember, we are all a chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Hello, friends. Are you enjoying what you're hearing from Systematic Ecology today in your earbuds, or whether it's on YouTube, or whether you're in traffic, or whether you're at work? Well, there's another way that you can stay engaged with us at Systematic Ecology, and that's on our Instagram account. Yes, hop over to Instagram, follow. We'll follow back, we promise. We post lots of fun stuff over there, whether they're updates on new podcasts that are coming out or getting ready to come out, or whether they're memes or we're sharing what other of our friends are up to out in the world. Sometimes we go live at events, whether we're at a Comic-Con or whether we are just hanging out with friends on the back porch grilling out. You can follow us there. We also have videos and reels, like what's in Will's pull box from his local comic book store. He shares what he's reading in the world of comics. And then Christian is going to do some reviews of Spider-Man comics called Spidey Swing Buys. That's going to be fun. And then there's non-canon stuff. Non-canon? What? Yeah, Joshua's going to be reviewing one intellectual property from outside of the canon of his favorite fandoms, or a piece of literature that's a part of the biblical extra-canonical material. Man, that sounds like fun. But yeah, Instagram is one of my favorite social media outlets, and I love to engage with friends and family over there. And so we hope that you can engage with us there. Hey, friends, this is your pal, Will Rose, and I have some exciting news. Systematic Geekology will return to Theology Beer Camp this year, October 17th through the 19th in Denver, Colorado. And we hope that you can join us. We are part of Theology Beer Camp in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, at my home church in my hometown. And that year, Theology Beer Camp was called the God Pods. And then we were in Missouri, a part of the Geek Stage. Yes, we had a whole entire Geek Stage where we had workshops and speakers and had incredible conversations. And Theology Beer Camp last year was called the God Pods Strike Back. So you kind of see where this is going. And so this year, the theme is the return of the God Pods. And so if you head over to Eventbrite and follow God Pods 2024, or hop over to Instagram, follow it there. And if you enter promo code Geekshire, you see what we did there? Yeah. Wilbo Baggins approves. If you enter Geekshire, all caps, no spaces, you'll get $25 off your ticket price. Geekshire, all caps, no spaces, Geekshire. Yeah, say it with me, Geekshire. Enter that, you get money off your ticket, and you can join us and hang out and drink beer and have great food. And even if you don't drink beer, you can have incredible food and beverages and conversations with your favorite host here at Systematic Geekology. The Geek Stage is growing. I'm proud of that, and we thank Tripp for this opportunity. We hope to see you at Theology Beer Camp, the Return of the God Pods 2024.